Quit eating your burgers off a coffee table. If you want to eat a burger, put it on a bar. Follow your instincts to B-Dubs for the new All-American Cheeseburger. Fresh, juicy beef smashed till it's crispy around the edges, covered in gooey cheese, and stacked to the ceiling with deliciousness. And knock that baby down with a frosted beer at the bar, just like the sports gods intended. The new All-American Cheeseburger at Buffalo Wild Wings. Roar! Please drink responsibly.
This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon, my name is Daryl Ong, and you're tuning in to the show that's all about the people and places of our capital city. This week, we dive into the world of martial arts, or more specifically, the art of self-defense. The fine line between protection and aggression has come to a point where the size of the knife matters. Mixed martial arts originated from self-defense, which by definition, the right for a person to use reasonable force to defend one's life or the life of others. Monarchy MMA, a gym that focuses on mixed martial arts in relation to self-defense, has been running for a while now with two gyms around the city, one in Bangsa, one in the city centre, and with courses like Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu and CrossFit, they help build not just the physical side of the body, but the mental strength as well. We caught up with the co-founders Mike Rogers and Samir Maribat as they tell us about the key components of self-defence and some issues surrounding this topic.
This is Mike Rogers. I originally came to KL to work in the oil and gas industry almost 10 years ago. Had a martial arts background going back quite a few years, and met up with Samir, who started Monarchy MMA, a very small place, and we sort of joined forces, and that's what Monarchy is today.
Can you just bring us to how Monarchy came to light?
I came to Malaysia in a completely different, for a different reason. I came here, I was working at the embassy of Belgium. I came here, I loved the country, I didn't like my job so much, so I quit, went back to Europe. And then after 6 months, I decided to come back here and just see what I can do to stay in Malaysia because I love the country.
And, you know, throughout that 6 months when you were here working in the embassy, do you see something that made you think like, okay, maybe it's time to open a gym here?
Every day I had a taxi coming to my place to bring me to Kota Damansara, to another gym. Because in what I was doing, Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu and everything that was involved mixed martial arts, there was like the only thing that was the closest to it was all the way in Kota Damansara and nothing in the city center. And I was thinking, okay, with all the expat community and the growth of MMA and how it became trendy, maybe there would be a market, but I didn't think about it so much. I would rather like be a student and go far to train. And it's only when I came back a year after that I was like, okay, I gave a class in a Muay Thai gym of Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, and then turnout was pretty good, and I decided to go my way and try to get a little space and do my own thing.
Mm. It's one thing you said that's really interesting, that MMA is the trendy thing now, but for me personally, the first kicks of MMA I seen were on TV, but the history is way before that, right?
MMA originally started out of self-defense. If you went back 50 years ago, you had a bunch of pure form martial arts.
Yeah.
But after World War II, there were several different groups around the world that realized that no single pure martial art was really practical in a real confrontation on the street. So several groups, you had the Israelis create a form called Krav Maga, you had the Americans create a form called Kajukenpo, and they were all the same thing, where a group of guys with different martial arts background got together and key techniques from each martial art that worked on the street. And that was MMA for a long time until the recent popularity of the competitive MMA.
Well, the rise of MMA, like the first UFC was pure form of martial arts going against each other. Mm. And I'm not so much on the self-defense aspect. I love the sport aspect of
MMA,
martial
the
arts
competitive,
mixed,
the competitive
yeah, mixed
part,
martial
yeah.
arts. So it was basically one discipline against the other. And then what we see is there's eras after eras. There was an era of the wrestlers, an era of the Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, and now we see that everybody's getting so good in wrestling and Jiu-Jitsu, it's hard to take them down and start having all those crazy kicks and angles like Conor McGregor or Anthony Pettis, who really come with those crazy kicks, and it's very hard to take them down, very hard to submit them. And now the era is those crazy strikers who are impossible to bring on the ground or very difficult to submit.
Oh, right.
For a long time, it was the Jiu-Jitsu guys who were like taking people down and submitting them. And then at some point they had a very hard time bringing the people down more and more. If you look at the stats of the finishes in MMA, you have more and more a growth of decisions because they nullify each other. Yeah, they block each other's technique. There's always an evolution of the game, years after years. I see it.
And it's still evolving.
It's still
right
evolving.
Now. Yeah, Monarchy MMA Gym, you guys have two outlets, one in the city center as well as one in Bangsa. Can you just tell us more about Monarchy, you know, what is its vision and, you know, the types of activities and classes you guys offer in there?
Yeah, you know, we offer several key components of mixed martial arts. Traditional boxing, Muay Thai, which is a combination of boxing and kicking. Mm-hmm. Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, which is primarily focused on ground fighting. And then overall fitness, which is really very critical, either in competitive MMA or in self-defense.
Narrowing it down to self-defense, in your own words, how would you describe the self-defense classes at Monarchy?
Well, the self-defense classes are what they are, a traditional self-defense form where we take critical elements that myself and the other instructors have learned to be practical in a real confrontation, and we try to teach those to people, and we try to teach them repetitively because at the end of the day, you know, it's only through practice that you actually can apply any of these things in the real world. People get in confrontations, typically will happen in parking garages, they'll typically happen in a bar, typically happen in, you know, in a lot of different places. So we try to simulate that by, you know, putting people in different situations, like if somebody's trying to strangle you, they've got you in a headlock, they're trying to confront you as you're unlocking your car. So sometimes we run classes outside in a parking garage. Okay. You know, that's how you try to simulate a real-world simulation. And then a lot of times you're attacked by more than one attacker. So you also have to consider, how do you deal with more than one person trying to mug you?
Somewhere. Okay.
Yeah, well, I think the first thing is, if you talk to people who do martial arts for a long time, what you actually find is very few of them have actually been in a real confrontation.
Yeah.
And I think the reason for that, when people train for self-defense or they train in martial arts, that training makes you more aware. So, for example, if you do a lot of practice in the gym with what happens if somebody grabs you from behind, when you walk down the sidewalk at night and you hear someone walking behind you, you tend to cross the street, you tend to look over your shoulder, and that simple awareness, in most cases, is what prevents you from getting into trouble. Self-defense training makes you more aware of your surroundings, and that awareness of surroundings prevents most confrontations, because most criminals, just like wild animals, they don't look for the strongest animal in the pack. They look for people who are unaware, people who are weak, people who are not self-confident. And so the training of martial arts for self-defense in itself is actually a preventative of actually being in a real confrontation, because you tend to be the type of person, you know, you see something coming before it happens.
Okay.
And that in itself is what often prevents the confrontation. And so that's what we would hope in training any of our students.
So before the physical side, is definitely the mental side and all of it. Just the instinct.
Yeah, the perfect world for us is that our students are trained such that they never actually have to use their martial arts.
It's just great to know that you can apply those principles. Yeah. How about in mixed martial arts? Do you find that you apply any of that elements in real life at all?
Well, like Mike said, those key sports in mixed martial arts derived from self-defense. Yeah. So judo was a form of self-defense before, and until they modified the rules to make it a competitive sport. Same thing for Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu is a self-defense system that became a sport today. So, of course, all the aspects of mixed martial art, you can apply them in a self-defense situation very easily. Putting, if you have only one attacker with jiu-jitsu, you can put him on the ground and get a hold of him, you know?
Okay, so different kind of art forms caters to different kind of situations, is it?
Yeah. Like, for me, it's been a while. I didn't have anything happening in the street. It's been a couple of years, but if I had to tell you the few situations I had in the street, when I had a one-on-one altercation, if there was no way to calm the person down, and I don't want to hurt the person. So it happened to me that in the parking that somebody attacked me here in Malaysia, and it was a one-on-one situation, and the guy just didn't want to leave me alone, and I was kind of trapped in an angle that I couldn't escape anymore because I was just avoiding the situation, and I had to take him down. And when I took him down, I didn't even hurt him. I asked him to calm down. And until the security of the building came.
Just to subdue him.
I had another altercation where it was multiple attackers. And then that moment, I didn't want to go on the ground. I was just like basically using my boxing. So I think different situations.
Is your life as exciting as Samir, Mike?
No, I mean, I've had a few close calls and one real confrontation. But, you know, there's, you know, one thing we always say in self-defense, regardless who starts the fight, the loser goes to the hospital, the winner goes to jail.
Oh, wow. That's great.
So nobody wins in a fight. So, you know, we always try to coach our students to, you know, if you can, prevent. If you do get in a confrontation, try to get the advantage to the point where you can run and get away from the situation. Because, you know, if you beat somebody down on the street, you may eventually win the argument, but if you hurt somebody, the first reaction of the police is going to take you to jail.
Definitely.
And it's just not what anybody really wants.
Monarchy MMA Gym, shifting the note a little bit. Do you guys control and focus on diets as well?
When somebody comes up to me and asks me if, like, what is their goal and they want to lose weight and get fit, etc., me with all my activities as a fighter, I know what it is to eat at what time. I'm not a professional nutritionist, but I know how to.
What's best for?
I know what's best. I've coached a few of the students on the nutrition base and they got to their goal when listening to my advice and what to eat and at what time.
It's definitely important to be physically fit, you know. I mean, if you put me in a fight with anyone, I wouldn't be able to, you know, stand a fight, even if I knew how to do self-defense.
Well, of course, it helps to be physically strong. But I had a student back in California. She was 16 years old. She was a girl. And they have these programs in the United States where you can ride along with a police officer as a teenager if you think that's your profession. The police officer stopped somebody, got in an altercation with a person who got the police officer on the ground. My 16-year-old student was able to subdue the attacker.
Oh, wow.
She was much smaller, you know, but just knowing the right techniques will work. And one of the forms that we teach is Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, and there it's very common to see someone who's physically not imposing at all be able to take down and win a physical argument with somebody much bigger and much stronger. It's not always about sheer strength.
Sheer strength.
Of course, if you have the skills and the strength, it helps.
We have some really small students like playing with adults, you know. We have a 13-year-old student, Wong. He's tiny, and he comes all the time. And when there's like adults coming to try out, they're 20, 30, 40 kilos more than him, and he just do whatever he wants with them.
Wow, sounds like I got to sign up. I'm just going to bring you guys through one of the recent news pieces that happened not too long ago, a few months ago, where this dude in KL was attacked by a robber. And in order to protect himself, you know, basically just stabbed him and killed the attacker. There is laws regarding self-defense, but how far is too far?
It's a very tough call, you know. I mean, you know, when you're in a life-threatening situation like that, what are you supposed to do? Say, well, sorry, but your knife is smaller than mine. Hold on a second. I'm going to put my big knife down and get one that's equal size. It's a very tough call, and I think it's hard to judge somebody who is being confronted in his own home with a knife and being asked to do something to save his life, and maybe not just his life, but his life of the family members. Mm. It's a very, very tough call.
I mean, not in just this case particular, but you were saying, Samir, that, you know, you handled one of your attackers enough just to subdue him and not to hurt him.
Yeah, he escaped. But when the police came, like, basically I had a break-in in my apartment in Belgium. Mm-hmm. And the attacker came in and basically, like, I didn't know what he had as a weapon. So I took something. I used to play baseball for 10 years, so I took my baseball bat and I got him a few times and he ran away. I had the adrenaline rush and everything because in this kind of situation, I had no idea what he was carrying. I had no idea if he had a gun. I had no idea if whatever he had. So I started swinging that bat. I didn't stop basically. And when the police came, even though they saw the lock was completely broke and everything, they told me that he could press charges against me if he wants to.
And that just sounds ridiculous to me.
Well, it sounds ridiculous to me too. And, you know, the truth is, even if you have martial arts skills, if somebody attacks you with a knife and you have no weapons at all, trying to subdue a person gently so that you don't hurt him is very risky for you personally. If somebody comes out and attacks you with a knife, even if you have martial arts skills, we always tell our students, if you're in a knife fight, no matter how skilled you are going to get cut. The trick is getting cut in places which are not lethal. So, you know, again, it gets back to me that the key is you've got to, you know, every situation is different. At the end of the day, you have to save your life, whatever that takes.
The That was Mike Rogers and Samir Maribet, the co-founders of Monarchy MMA Gym. If you'd like to find out more information about them and their effort for self-defense and mixed martial arts, do head over to www.monarchymma.com. Coming up, self-defense catered specifically to women. My name's Daryl Ong. Do stay tuned. This is I Love KL on BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, my name is Daryl Ong and you're tuned into I Love KL, the show that keeps you closer to the people and places of our capital city. Living in our capital city, many of us have been victims of theft and incidences that has led us to feel victimized. Today on the show, we explore self-defense and about safety techniques that can aid in protecting ourselves from untoward and dangerous incidents. Joining us here in the studio is the co-founders of Kapap Singapore, Magdalene Yeo and Yu Kwan, and they share with us some interesting points about self-defense. They explain to us the mission behind Kapap Academy and the reason for its formation and what makes them different about the practicing of self-defense.
Basically, Kapap Academy Singapore was founded by my teacher, whose brother was actually killed in Johor Bahru by street gangs, really. And in memory of his brother, he started the school so that in the hopes that nobody has actually suffered the same fate as his brother. So from then on, we are a social enterprise and we have been doing, you know, good work in Singapore and Malaysia for the past 7 to 8 years already. For us, our mission is very simple. We want to empower the ordinary people with realistic self-defense skills. And that's our core mission that we're dedicated to doing it.
Tackling the issue of self-defense is one that requires knowledge, and the Academy has focused its teaching while giving us a detailed insight to each of their forms.
So basically, Kapap is a hand-to-hand combat system that started from Israel. But we have since moved on to several other systems, as mentioned, like Gracie Jiu-Jitsu, which is basically what people know as Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, and primarily focuses on how to get up from ground situations. We also use American catch wrestling, which is also a ground fighting system, but focuses on the top game approach, where we basically learn how to control and dominate a person on the ground from the top position. We also do a little bit of MMA, where it's a mix of stand-up striking, kicking, you know, and then later on follow with takedowns. Of course, we also have defense against knives and all the other weaponry systems, so that's basically what our series actually comprises of.
They led us on the different techniques used and what makes modern street combatives highly effective as the first measure of self-defense, especially for beginners that are skeptical to what type of self-defense they want to venture into.
The key unique thing about our program is that we also use the understanding of predatory behavior as a pre-conflict part. So unlike most other martial arts programs where they go into engagement right at the start, we prefer to focus on pre-conflict. Once you understand predator behavior, you know how to avoid potentially dangerous situations, walk away from potentially dangerous situations. We also incorporate the use of bodyguarding principles, which is basically to escape and evade the situation. Now, only as a last resort, if you have to engage, you will actually have to use techniques that are very simple, intuitive, and effective, and that is where modern street combatives come into play. So modern street combatives is the blend of various systems, as mentioned earlier, Kapap, Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, catch wrestling, etc. But the main philosophy is whatever we teach in modern street combatives has to be simple, effective, intuitive, and it doesn't have to rely on strength. I think for a pure beginner who have absolutely no background in martial arts, I think they should start off learning modern street combatives, because we built them a really key foundation, and within a period of just 10 weeks, 2 hours each, you can learn a set of basic self-defense skills that will help you to keep safe on the streets. We focus really on defense against attacks that are typically done on women. For example, like rape situations or body grabs, forearm grabs, choke holds, etc. So we will focus on these kind of attacks and teach the women how to get out of it. They interviewed me on that particular issue because there was a spate of increase in molestation in public transports in Singapore. So they came down to the studio and requested us to reenact a few scenarios of molestation in public transport. So I basically demonstrated how to get out using a mixture of small joint manipulations, which is basically the use of finger manipulations to get out of various molestation situations.
The human body has a few pressure points that can be tackled in order to get out of the situation.
Pressure points are basically just to get these, you know, molesters away from you because of pain. But it's temporary pain, nothing too dangerous, nothing too fatal. It's a quick getaway. But if the molest, you know, gets a little bit more serious, they might have to use small joint manipulations, like finger joint manipulations, to get out from situations like this.
We asked them to give us more information about the release of their tactical pen series, a real pen, and what makes it special as a form of training.
Well, the tactical pen is something that we actually kind of made it, and we looked for many other pens before coming to this present one. So it's made up of the aircraft aluminium, so it's really very hardy, and it could really break open a window. And one end of it, there's a DNA catcher. So that is very useful if your molester assailant comes to you and you're able to scrape some skin off, and that can be sent to identify and catch the perpetrator later on. Mm-hmm. So it's a two-part class. One is the stand-up, so we teach everything in using the tactical pen and how to use the skill sets needed to use to at least bring down the assailant. And if that is not possible, then that's where the part two of the class comes in, and that's on the ground. And if you are really pinned down to the ground, and we teach how to use that pen and to get out of that situation.
Yes, and may I just add on to Mac's point? The great thing about tactical pen is it's not classified as a weapon. It's a real pen. You can use it for daily use.
Really?
Write, you know, write with it, etc. And because you use it on a daily basis, the fact of the matter is you probably will not forget bring your pen out. And therefore, when the time comes and we actually have to use it for self-defense, it's always with you. Mm-hmm. You never forget to bring a daily item like a pen, you know, with you outdoors. So I think that's the best part about it.
Yung Kwan highlights the self-defense program in the academy whilst introducing a more detailed explanation behind modern street combatives. We also asked them what form of self-defense do they focus on.
Well, basically in self-defense program, we actually have a modern street combatives program as best-selling because that is really to cater to the masses. We start off our students learning from modern street combatives as a system, learning from things like stand-up attacks, defense against forearm grabs, defense against chokes, to ground attacks, defense against rape situations, defense against ground attacks, to defense against weaponry like knives, sticks, parangs, and even to teach them the use of improvised weapons like the use of tactical pen, umbrella, etc. So that is the foundational program. Now, if after the foundational program, they're interested to learn more, we have specialized training programs called the Combatist Program. And in the Combatist Program, they learn a little bit more advanced skill sets to start with street-style stand-up fighting, takedowns included, ground fighting stuff, you know, that a little bit more offensive, and also the use of knives, the use of tomahawks, etc. Actually, we emphasize on the modern street combatants.
Modern street combatants.
Because, as we mentioned, it goes back to the mission of empowering ordinary people with realistic self-defense skills. So if we can reach out to the masses with this simple system called modern street combatants, that is the best. In fact, the specialized training program is for a small group of people who really just want to get good at learning self-defense. I think for us, it's because of the nature that our program is structured where it's so simple and intuitive. I think the basic 10-week program will guarantee them a certain level of understanding. But of course, we do clarify with our students that if they have more time, we'll actually advise them to keep coming for the next level. There are 4 levels in total, 3 levels right now that we teach, and the 4th one is still planning. So if they can go through all 4 levels, which probably takes about, you know, in total about a year or so of training, I think they will master quite a good set of skills.
Magdalene tells us about household objects as weapons of self-defense.
Well, household items, we can easily use things like the broom you have in our house, or maybe you have a bat, or even just a long umbrella that is highly effective. You don't really want to whack at it, especially with an umbrella, but what we teach is at least make it threatening and eye it at the assailant's eye. Mm-hmm. So that is very threatening to them. Simple household things like that you can find around the house, you can always improvise it.
And that's really good to tackle home invasion.
They tell us about how an individual can be mentally prepared when a situation arises, and they explain on the effectiveness of training in real life scenarios.
I think that's what a lot of people think because, as I mentioned, a lot of people will say that by learning traditional martial arts, they are learning self-defense. But as I mentioned earlier, it's quite different. Whereas in my school, when we teach self-defense, we are actually reenacting common scenarios of attack. All right. For example, when we teach you a defense against a forearm grab, we actually reenact how somebody will actually grab you. Mm-hmm. And then you learn to get up from there. So the difference between reality and training is not that much in my school, in the modern street combative systems that we teach.
I had trained in Aikido for more than 5 years to get to a first-time black belt. Mm-hmm. So while I love the art, One thing I found out when I get into modern street combatants is that there is a lot of rolling in Aikido, and we learn to slam our palms on the floor when we are being thrown. So when I went into Kapap and they throw me, and there was once that was not on the mats, and it really hurts my hand.
Oh, really?
Yeah, my palm. So that again, you see, is not realistic. I mean, in a real situation, there won't be mats lying around. So because I've been trained to always hit it that way, or even to just roll, and then when I was on the hard floor, oh, I came out, oh, whoa, ouch.
Basically, you build wrong reflexes if you train in situations that are not realistic. And one factor that a lot of people also, you know, ask me, common question ask, if it's a real attack, can I really handle it? Would I freeze, you know, and not remember anything that I've learned? Well, I think it boils down to the training again. You see, if you train in a realistic scenario, it's like rehearsing for the actual attack. The more you rehearse, right, with the realistic scenario in mind, you are less afraid when it actually happens because you have already rehearsed it. So I think that's what makes our training so different from most of the traditional martial arts schools. So it's important to be mentally and emotionally prepared. And I think that's why we make our training very realistic. So we actually instill some degree of fear in our students during the training. So by training them to face up to their fears and counter that, it gives them, it builds confidence in them, it empowers them both physically and mentally, so they walk away from that 10-week course a lot stronger as a person. I would say that when faced with a tackle with a knife or gun, if they all they want is just your valuables, by all means, give your valuables. But if they want something more than that, for example, making you follow them to whatever place they want you to go, you have to fight there and then, because based on statistics, the chance of you getting yourself killed the moment you're removed from point A to point B is a lot higher. So in that situation, especially for knife defense, the first thing you have to do is to control the knife hand. Not the knife, the knife hand. Get off the line of attack. Once you control the knife hand, you basically minimize the ability for the guy to stab you or slash you with the knife. And then of course, after that, all your counter attacks have to come in. We need to assert ourselves. We need to show that we're not an easy victim. I think that's the one key factor. When the predator look out for their victim, they look at easy victims. I show them control. I show them assertive. Don't mess around with me. I'm not trying to provoke you. But if you do try to attack me, I will defend myself.
That was Magdalene Yeo and Yong Kwan, the co-founders of Kapap. For more information on Kapap and their efforts, do drop them an email at contact@kapapasia.com for more details. Sadly, we've come to the end of today's show, but if you want to check out the podcast, do head over to our website www.bfm.my/ilovekl to download the podcast. Don't forget to get in touch with the shows. Just tweet us. We are at BFM Radio. My name is Daryl Ong. You have been tuning in to the show that's all about the people and places of our capital city. Join us again next week for another exciting episode of I Love KL right here on BFM 89.9, the business station.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.
Hi, I'm Jay Farner, CEO of Quicken Loans. 30% of Americans who are planning home improvements of $5,000 or more will pay for those renovations with a high-interest credit card. That may not be a great idea. A better idea may be to take cash out of your home with a Quicken Loans 30-year fixed-rate mortgage. The rate today on our 30-year fixed-rate mortgage is 4.375%, APR 4.65%. Call us today at 800-QUICKEN or go to rocketmortgage.com.
Rate subject to change. Pay 2.13% fee to receive this discounted rate. Call for cost information and conditions. Equal housing lender. License in all 50 states. NMLS number 3030.